they sailed the world, sampling waters, netting fish, and hauling a dredge through sediments. It was evidently dreary work. Out of a complement of 240 scientists and crew, one in four jumped ship, and eight more died or went mad. Driven to distraction by the mind-numbing routine of years of dredging, in the words of the historian Samantha Weinberg. But they sailed across almost 70,000 nautical miles of sea, collected over 4,700 new species of marine organisms, gathered enough information to create a 50-volume report, which took 19 years to put together, and gave the world the name of a new scientific discipline, oceanography. They also discovered, by means of depth measurements, that there appeared to be submerged mountains in the mid-Atlantic, prompting some excited observers to speculate that they had found the lost continent of Atlantis. Because the institutional world mostly ignored the seas, it fell to devoted and very occasional amateurs to tell us what was down there. Modern deep water exploration begins with Charles William Beebe and Otis Barton in 1930. Although they were equal partners, the more colorful Beebe has always received far more written attention. Born in 1837 into a well-to-do family in New York City, Beebe studied zoology at Columbia University, then took a job as a bird keeper at the New York Zoological Society. Tiring of that, he decided to adopt the life of an adventurer, and for the next quarter century traveled extensively through Asia and South America with a succession of attractive female assistants, whose jobs were inventively described as historian and technicist, or assistant in fish problems. He supported these endeavors with a succession of popular books, with titles like Edge of the Jungle and Jungle Days, though he also produced some respectable books on wildlife and ornithology. In the mid-1920s, on a trip to the Galapagos Islands, he discovered the delights of dangling, as he described deep-sea diving. Soon afterward, he teamed up with Barton, who came from an even wealthier family, had also attended Columbia, and also longed for adventure. Although Beebe nearly always gets the credit, it was in fact Barton who designed the first bathysphere, from the Greek word for deep, and funded the $12,000 cost of its construction. It was a tiny and necessarily robust chamber, made of cast iron 1.5 inches thick, and with two small portholes containing quartz blocks 3 inches thick. It held two men, but only if they were prepared to become extremely well acquainted. Even by the standards of the age, the technology was unsophisticated. The sphere had no maneuverability, it simply hung on the end of a long cable, and only the most primitive breathing system. To neutralize their own carbon dioxide, they set out open cans of soda lime, and to absorb moisture, they opened a small tub of calcium chloride, over which they sometimes waved palm fronds to encourage chemical reactions. But the nameless little bathysphere did the job it was intended to do. On the first dive in June 1930 in the Bahamas, Barton and Beebe set a world record by descending to 600 feet. By 1934, they had pushed the record to 3,028 feet, where it would stay until after the war. Barton was confident the device was safe to a depth of 4,500 feet, though the strain on every bolt and rivet was audibly evident with each fathom they descended. At any depth, it was brave and risky work. At 3,000 feet, their little porthole was subjected to 19 tons of pressure per square inch. Death at such a depth would have been instantaneous, as Beebe never failed to observe in his many books, articles, and radio broadcasts. Their main concern, however, was that the shipboard winch, straining to hold on to a metal ball and 2 tons of steel cable, would snap and send the two men plunging to the sea floor. In such an event, nothing could have saved them. The only thing their descents didn't produce was a great deal of worthwhile science. Although they encountered many creatures that had not been seen before, the limits of visibility and the fact that neither of the intrepid aquanauts was a trained oceanographer meant they often weren't able to describe their findings in the kind of detail that real scientists craved. The sphere didn't carry an external light, merely a 250-watt bulb they could hold up to the window, but the water below 500 feet was practically impenetrable anyway, and they were peering into it through 3 inches of quartz, so anything they hoped to view would have to be nearly as interested in them as they were in it. About all they could report, in consequence, was that there were a lot of strange things down there. On one dive in 1934, Beebe was startled to spy a giant serpent, more than 20 feet long and very wide. It passed too swiftly to be more than a shadow. Whatever it was, nothing like it has been seen by anyone since. Because of such vagueness, their reports were generally ignored by academics. After their record-breaking descent of 1934, Beebe lost interest in diving and moved on to other adventures, but Barton persevered. To his credit, Beebe always told anyone who asked that Barton was the real brains behind the Enterprise, but Barton seemed unable to step from the shadows. He, too, wrote thrilling accounts of their underwater adventures and even starred in a Hollywood movie called Titans of the Deep, featuring a bathysphere and many exciting, largely fictionalized encounters with aggressive giant squid and the like. He even advertised Camel cigarettes. "They don't give me jittery nerves." In 1948, he increased the depth record by 50% with a dive to 4,500 feet in the Pacific Ocean near California, but the world seemed determined to overlook him. One newspaper reviewer of Titans of the Deep actually thought the star of the film was Beebe. Nowadays, Barton is lucky to get a mention. At all events, he was about to be comprehensively eclipsed by a father and son team from Switzerland, Auguste and Jacques Picard, who were designing a new type of probe called a bathyscaphe, meaning deep boat. Christened Trieste after the Italian city in which it was built, the new device maneuvered independently, though it did little more than just go up and down. On one of its first dives in early 1954, it descended to below 13,287 feet, nearly 3 times Barton's record-breaking dive of 6 years earlier. But deep-sea dives required a great deal of costly support, and the Picards were gradually going broke. In 1958, they did a deal with the U.S. Navy, which gave the Navy ownership, but left them in control. Now, flush with funds, the Picards rebuilt the vessel, giving it walls 5 inches thick and shrinking the windows to just 2 inches in diameter, little more than peepholes. But it was now strong enough to withstand truly enormous pressures, and in January 1960, Jacques Picard and Lieutenant Don Walsh of the U.S. Navy sank slowly to the bottom of the ocean's deepest canyon, the Mariana Trench, some 250 miles